From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me on this Friday of all Fridays. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving yesterday. Oh, coming up, we're going to celebrate 25 years of old school sessions on Radio Catskill with an in-depth conversation with the host of the show, DJ Chucks and Selector Starkey. From Queens block parties to Florida Pirate Radio to Radio Catskill itself, DJ Chuck's story is the journey of a true, lifelong music lover. That interview is coming up. Also, as folks try to deal with rising costs and the holiday season, Genevieve Hartnett explores how Instacart is helping people find work and keep their families fed. That story's coming right up, but first we do have news from New York's upcoming gubernatorial race. Because New York Governor Kathy Hochul is now refunding thousands of dollars in campaign donations after criticism from a Democratic primary challenger. WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind reports.
An executive order prohibits state officers and employees from contributing to a governor's political campaign, but WNYC found Hochul raised more than $70,000 from people she appointed to various advisory boards. A spokesperson for Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado says Hochul is, quote, driving a truck through her own ethics order. Hochul's campaign now says it will return the donations. NYPERG's Blair Horner, a government watchdog, says that's a good thing.
She's raised tens of millions of dollars, and so this is a relatively tiny amount. And what matters is what the governor does when it's brought to her attention that this happened.
Hochul's campaign has more than $17 million on hand. In Albany, I'm Jimmy Vielkind for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for that report. Yesterday was Thanksgiving, so we are now fully immersed in the holiday season, whether we like it or not. Many Americans are finding creative ways to generate more income to accommodate the rising cost of living and the rising cost of groceries. Grocery delivery service Instacart says that it's helped create more than 200,000 jobs since its founding a decade ago, as well as supporting local grocery stores and bringing more fresh produce to communities. Instacart also says that their service has helped millions of Americans during the government shutdown who saw their SNAP benefits expire. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett spoke with Sarah Fleisch, Senior Director of Policy and Research Development at Instacart, about job creation and feeding families throughout the holidays.
When most people think about Instacart, they think about going online, ordering groceries, and having them delivered right to their door. But what we often don't see is that behind every order are retailers who are restocking their shelves, CPG brands that are connecting with new customers, and shoppers who are earning extra income. And so, for example, nationwide, we've seen that retailers have added an additional $22 billion in revenue by partnering with Instacart and 237,000 grocery jobs. $24 billion earned by Instacart shoppers nationwide, and over $3 billion that have been saved by customers shopping on Instacart.
Is there anything in this report about Instacart's giving or partnering with nonprofits?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked about that. We have a couple. We partner with nonprofit organizations like Partnership for a Healthier America and Feeding America. We really focus on helping people access food and access nutritious food. So one example is we use our technology to do that. And we do it through something called Community Carts, which is essentially an online food drive where you can go on and donate to any food bank across the country that's on the platform. There's over 300 of them. And you donate exactly what those food banks have said that they need. Another is with Partnership for a Healthier America. We actually recently reached our goal of providing 10 million servings of fruits and vegetables to families across the country. That's another big focus of ours, is helping people access more produce.
The shutdown is ending, but there's still this battle over SNAP and what you're able to access with EBT. Can you talk at all about your work with that and how you are helping to keep families fed during the holidays?
Instacart actually was one of the first to partner with the USDA in 2020 to start bringing SNAP online, so that people could use SNAP to shop online. And over the past number of years, we've brought SNAP online in all 50 states and DC. So anyone across the country can use SNAP to shop from local retailers. We now reach over 98% of households that are enrolled in SNAP, giving people access to online grocery shopping, which can be really crucial for people who are dealing with a number of barriers, transportation barriers, mobility barriers, caregiving, to be able to access that convenience that other customers can access. Most recently, during the government shutdown, we supported SNAP families by offering 50% off of a grocery order, up to $50. And we also relaunched the Community Carts program to help food banks get the food and supplies that they need the most.
What does your scope look like in New York State? And if people are struggling to find food, like with the holidays coming up, are there any specific statewide initiatives that they can learn about?
So we've helped create more than 17,000 grocery jobs in New York. Those are jobs in retail, in grocery retail locations, deli counter, cashier. That's driven over $1.7 billion in revenue for grocers in New York. Around 45,000 shoppers shop in New York. So those are earning opportunities for people in the state. And New York customers have saved more than $195 million by using the Instacart platform. Over the coming months, Instacart partners with food banks and community organizations across the country, including in New York, to provide support and meals for families. So I would stay tuned for more information about what's happening in state.
Are you working at all with any like local farmers in areas, whether it's in New York or across the country?
So Instacart partners with retailers. We do partner with lots of local and independent retailers, some of whom do work to get their produce locally. We do not partner directly with farmers or farms at this point, but it is always something that we're interested in thinking about and seeing where things go.
Are there any challenges you're anticipating as we go into the holiday season? And how do you plan to tackle them?
Our mission at Instacart is to help people access the food they love and give them more time to enjoy it together. And I think that that remains a constant at all times. It remains constant day to day for us to really think about that as we implement all sorts of programs, whether it's how we help retailers or shoppers or customers, how we help brands connect with people, and also how we think about our work partnering with nonprofit organizations and communities. And I think it's the same going into the holidays, just really being set on the fact that we're here to help people access food in all sorts of ways, whether it's coming out of the most recent issues with SNAP or going into the holiday season.
Yeah. And is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we let you go, or just any programs people can get involved with?
Really, it's that Instacart, as I said, is this four-sided marketplace. And what I think is really interesting as we researched and prepared this report is seeing how that order that is placed has a ripple effect. It has a ripple effect across local retailers, small retailers who are trying to increase their revenue, trying to help their communities, the shoppers who are local people, you know, moms and dads and students in the community who are earning income, oftentimes extra income, those local brands and food producers who are trying to connect with new customers and share what their product is all about. And then the customers themselves who are saving money and saving time by shopping on Instacart. And so it's really opened up even my aperture to think about the work that we do and how it really ripples out into communities.
Well, Sarah, thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Genevieve. Well, still to come, my in-depth interview with DJ Chucks and Selector Starkey, hosts of Old School Sessions, who are celebrating 25 years here on Radio Catskill. And they'll both be DJing live in person tomorrow at the Music Sale. We'll talk all about it. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You know, when people are thinking of best movies, sometimes they're thinking of movies they've only watched once. Sometimes those movies are so harrowing you'd only want to watch them once.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
This is Callison Stratton, host of Liberation Station, a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers. Liberation Station airs Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, only on Radio Catskill.
It's the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Radio Catskill's big annual music sale is tomorrow at the Liberty Mall in Liberty. And not only do we have tons of records, CDs, stereo equipment, and much, much more for purchase to benefit this public radio station, we'll also be celebrating one of the longest-running shows here at this radio station. 25 years of old-school sessions on Radio Catskill. We'll be celebrating with the hosts of the show, DJ Chucks and Selector Starkey, spinning live throughout the event tomorrow at Radio Catskill's big annual music sale. Old School Sessions, it's a phenomenal four-hour-long Saturday night DJ show that rocks the Catskills with the absolute best in vintage funk, hip-hop, reggae, disco, house, and more subgenres than you could ever hope to keep track of. You don't have to keep track of it because these are deep cuts curated by true vinyl hounds and music lovers who know their stuff. In the following conversation, we learn how DJ Chucks discovered music and DJing, how he came to Radio Catskill, and how Selector Starkey came to join him on a musical journey that's spanned a quarter century on the station alone so far and counting. Let's start the story with Chucks describing the first music he encountered as a child.
Record playing was the thing, you know. We didn't have what we have today with the internet and all these players and stuff. And, you know, no, we didn't have that. We had 45s and we had albums. And, you know, that was one of the ways I entertained not only myself, but the family and friends that would come by, you know, or I would go to, you know, like a friend's house and, you know, I know they had records, so, you know, and they would let me play, you know, entertain. So I would always ask, you know, I didn't play much with the kids, you know, I was more into the records and stuff. So there were kids, I would play a little bit, but before the night's through, I got to get on the turntable and play records. So that was very, entertaining for me and also a learning experience, you know. So I learned about the music, and you know, back then we weren't just playing one genre, you know, there was everything that was going on with and whatever new was coming out, you know. But at that time it was Motown for me, Motown and reggae. It was a lot of that going on, but there was other stuff, you know, the James Brown and the pop music, you know, from the 60s and 70s, you know. So I actually learned a lot of the pop music when I was really young, because I used to go, actually I had asthma when I was a child, and I used to go to the doctor's office all the time, you know, to go get checked up, get medication and all that. And, you know, the radio was on, and, you know, I heard a lot of the 60s pop, you know, late 60s, 70s pop. And I really fell in love with that stuff too. So, and then as time went on, there was other genres, you know. You had funk, and then everybody says disco, but it's funk. It's, you know, it's all funk music. But the disco, you know, the R&B, and then, you know, Latin music. I grew up on a lot of merengue. My dad, you know, turned me on to merengue and salsa. We had calypso, of course, the reggae, you know. So all of that is what came into play. And, you know, it was always fun. And then the hip hop culture, when that started, whenever it started, we don't, you know, no one has there's no set date. It just, you know, more from the house. It turned from the house to the front of the yard or the backyard, and then it got into the parks. And that's where I came in.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because that's what I wanted to ask you. Is like, what point does hip hop enter your picture? Because that was around the time that it was entering a lot of people's picture, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, like it was more of the park jams and the block parties that kind of, you know, it was going on. That was going on at the time. And then somewhere along the line, the recording contract came out, and you know, Sugar Hill Gang was like the first recorded rap group, you know. So, and then we fell in love because we know the guys, you know, or there'd be some guys from the neighborhood on the record, you know, or whatever it was. But the park jams and the block parties is where it was, because the DJ was in the forefront, and the rapper, you know, different rappers would come by. Some guys had a little echo box and a mic in a little box, like they would carry this, like a tote, and they would, some of them had the echo chamber with their mic, and we plugged them in and let them do their thing, you know, and that's what it was. It was something to look forward to. And myself, I would travel that whole South, that whole Jamaica Queens section by bike. You know, I was young, like I said, you know, so by that time I was already, I wasn't even teen yet. I wasn't in my teens yet.
Chucks, your brother had ran a sound system, right, with his friends, and that was part of Queens culture and what Queens brought to hip hop, right?
One of those, yeah. There was quite a few sound systems in our area, but we were one of the earlier ones. You know, the first 231 Park was a junior high school. I think I want to say he El Majesty Disco, or also known as Black Arrow Disco. I think they were the first to set up in that park, and then it became, let's say, a ritual, you know, because other guys would come and set up, you know, and then it went into like the 80s, off and on through the years. So, you know, yeah, we set up right there on the curb. We didn't go in the park. We was on the curb, and, you know, people were standing around and looking. They didn't understand what was going on, you know, but they knew about the music, and they were feeling the music and enjoying the music.
How long before you were a DJ at one of these parties? Because I can imagine you like being there and enjoying it and then lending a hand to help out however you can. At what point are you actually playing some records at one of these events?
I want to say there was a big battle. It was Black Arrow Disco and I want to say Infinity Machine. They came to Montebello Park, which is in my neighborhood, right across the street. And they came with some, you know, they had fancy stuff. They had like Servant Vegas, and they were the first sound system I saw with a gas powered generator. They ran the whole system off the generator. I was impressed with that because I was like, oh, cool, you have to plug it in, you know. And that we was going at it all night, and it, you know, no permits, no nothing. We were just hanging out. The park was packed up, and the crowd was swaying back and forth. And I was about 78. So 78, I want to say 78 was that sound system battle. I want to say Infinity Machine. I'm going to check with my brother on that one. Original Baby J. What's up to Original Baby J? You know, he took me on the road, you know, and I learned, you know, hand the records. You know, we all start as a record boy first. You know, what they call record boy, you pull out, you know, he'll shout out a track. You got to know what it is or else you're in trouble. You know, so they would shout out a track and you know, you don't hand them the sleeve. And the jacket, you just take the record out and you just hand them the record on the right side. So they just grab it and put it on. They don't look at it. They don't flip it and study it. They just, you give it to them and on the right side, and they put it on and they do their thing.
I'm Jason Dole. We're talking to DJ Chucks and Selector Starkey, hosts of Old School Sessions. As a young man, Chucks moved to Florida, where he continued to DJ and where he discovered radio, working with a pirate radio station back in the day. If you want to hear that part, it's in the full interview, which is up now at WJFFradio.org. For right now, we're going to skip ahead to the part where Chucks arrives at Radio Catskill and is given a volunteer shift by then-station manager Christine Ahern, and soon, his own show.
I had moved from Florida to New York, and I was trying to find, I had that energy that I wanted to play. You know, I wanted to do radio or get back into a mobile DJ type of thing. And a friend of mine named Jody that lived there at the time, she said, you know, there's a radio station in the neighborhood. You got to go to, you know, Jeffersonville, whatever. Yeah. Let's go. And she took me there. We met Christine, filled out some paperwork, and I came back as a volunteer, you know, and she put me on air. She gave me an on air slot to, you know, get me comfortable, and it helped a lot. And then I could be creative. I was able to be creative at the same time. So I wouldn't use the music bed that was on the Demod. Remember? The Demod.
Yeah. So it was like a news shift. You were like hosting a show shift, just doing the voice breaks before you actually started the shows. You're getting used to doing it that way, but you did start working your own music as the beds to talk over during the breaks during these national shows. You know, what else do we all talk about the story before Selector Stark enters the picture?
I was working in the city and I had a place up here. I'd come on the weekends and I would come on Thursday night. So I'd listen to Liberty Green on the way up and I would listen to Chuck's on Saturday. And that was, for a year or so. And I'm not really one to call a radio station in, but I was such a big fan. And I called Chuck's and I said, do you know it's going to be James Brown's birthday coming up?
I remember that.
And I'm a record collector. And, you know, this is how Chuck's and I started a friendship with number one, we're both beat heads. And so we have that. We're both record collectors and we both love radio. So I told him, I got all these James Brown records. I collect James Brown records. And Chuck's was like, bring them in. And I was like, okay. So I came, I brought some records and Chuck's put me on the air and he played all my 45s. He played them all night long. Back in those days, station was a bit more loose and old school sessions would start at 10 and Chuck's would bring like 20 crates of records, literally 20 crates of records. And he would go until 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And then he would put a mini disc on. So old school sessions.
Another few hours, yeah.
Yeah, old school sessions back in those days was going from 10 until 2 in the morning. Anyway, so he told me to go in the air. I was really scared. But, he taught me how to relax. And I started coming and hanging out and bringing records. And Chuck said, start playing. And I started doing a reggae segment as well as sharing my records with Chuck's, and we just both had that love of music, and so that's how it came in.
And I'm by no means trying to be pejorative here. I just like bringing things back full circle. You bring it back to those curb parties, in even in that sense, you started as like the record boy. Like you started
exactly with the record. Yeah. That very, 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 very true. Yes, I was the record boy. I was like, here, check this one out, or. I would dig through Chuck's crates and be like, oh, what's this? And we put it on,
So how many years was the show going on before Selector Starkey became such a part of it?
It wasn't much long after we started Old Selector.
Just like a couple of years.
Yeah.
I remember things kind of changed just because I feel like those first early years of Old School Sessions, because I was listening too, I feel like your style in the early days was you'd like pick a genre and stick with it all night long. Like Chuck's would like do kind of like just get deep into something, and that's what he was doing for hours on end. And I think when Selector comes on, you start saying like, hey, let's mix it up a little bit and do multiple genres and stuff. Yeah, well, in a single night.
Well, Chuck's would do that once in a while. He would play a reggae segment, and so I pushed him to do it more, or just, me being there and bringing reggae records, kind of, it just all happened very naturally, just being a little more wide spectrum, because Chuck's has deep, deep record collection and is knowledgeable on a lot of genres. And back then he was spinning more like 80s and dance and hip hop, but he really kind of expanded it. But he was always experimenting and it just happened more when I came around,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Chuck's, we're excited because you're going to be here on Saturday for the music and the big annual music sale. We got small music sales all 3 years, but this is the big one we're waiting for. And we're really excited because we're going to be celebrating 25 years of Old School Sessions, 35 years of Radio Catskill at the big music sale with you guys both spinning live. What can people expect?
I wouldn't say it's going to be Old School Sessions. The normal stuff. I think we're going to be playing some odd stuff from the sale because there's going to be tons of records there. We're going to be digging as well. So looking for, obscure tracks and something different, but then it'd be some of the usual, So we try to mix it up and just hang out, have fun for, a couple of hours with the people coming in to shop and buy, music.
This is going to be your first music sale in quite a while, won't it?
Yes, I haven't been, and, you know, it's just so much been going on. And
yeah.
Holidays, you know, because we usually have dinner here.
Yeah.
You know, big Thanksgiving dinner, so.
We do it.
Have family over and stuff like that.
For a number of years there, it wasn't a music sale unless, like, both of you guys were, like, just digging through the crates, digging through the boxes, which is, again, like you said, that's where you get your start.
Well, one thing about the music sale is, you know, I always tried to be there early, but in the coming years, I would come later, and disco music was not as popular as it is today. So I could come later, and I could find R&B and disco after people had, like, burned the, what I call burning the crates. But younger people nowadays are grabbing up all the R&B and disco records. So that is not true anymore. So I got to get there early now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So no more slacking on the music sales. People come from far and wide. It's definitely WJFF's biggest
event. It's our biggest event. It's our biggest public event, absolutely, of the year. So I know you guys are going to be there. I'm talking to listener now. Listener, I hope you're going to be there. I hope you bring a friend. I've been saying this is my tagline for this year is, like, it's not just going to be a music sale. It's going to be a happening, and you want to bring a friend.
And there's literally something for, you know, you say something for everybody.
Yes.
This is something for everybody.
This truly is. And it's something different, just like Starkey was saying earlier, like, it's different at each time.
Yeah.
You want to get the freshest stuff, be there to line up before 10 a.m. You want a more relaxed shopping experience? Come a couple hours later. You want to go through what's left at the very end, which people do. Like Patricio said, there's always a rush at the end of just people coming in to see, hey, what's left? Just the curious there.
Right.
It's you know, goes on for 5 hours and there's something for everyone.
Well, there's also auction part to it.
Auction.
It's not just one thing. And there's musical instruments. There's the speakers. There's got vinyl records, CDs. And I'm hoping that there's 45s this year. And
oh, man. They got cassettes.
Oh, we got cassettes. We've had 8-tracks. Past couple of years, we've been getting more 8-tracks. I haven't seen a lot before this sale, but we got pretty much everything. Well, anyway, I know you guys got to get going. So, Chucks, I wanted to say, like, congratulations and thank you so much for 25 years. Thank you so much for everything you've done for us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, like I said, it's been fun. You know, I miss the studio. I like it at home, too, but I miss the studio. I got to come and hang out.
And Selector Starkey, thank you so much for keeping this going for all these years. Thank you.
And thank you. And Jason, a personal thanks from both of us for always being there for Old School Sessions. Just always throughout the years. You're kind of like the fifth Beatle for Old School Sessions. You know what I mean? You've always been a big supporter of us. We thank you for that.
Thank you. All right, well, guys, thanks so much for talking, and I'm going to let you get ready to do what you do best. Thank you so much.
Later, Chucks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Old School Sessions airs for 4 hours every Saturday night right here on Radio Catskill with Selector Starkey starting at 8 and DJ Chuck starting at 10, and they will both be live and in person spinning tunes at Radio Catskill's music sale tomorrow, 11 to 3 at the Liberty Mall. It's been about 10 years since DJ Chucks has spun at a Radio Catskill event in person, so you don't want to miss this one. We've got all kinds of vinyl, from pristine collector's discs to old beat-up platters. We got thousands and thousands of records, almost as many CDs, a ton of CDs this year, actually. Maybe more CDs than records for the first time. We'll see. Cassettes as well, 8-tracks, some musical instruments, and come by, say hi to me. I'll have my own kitschy Christmas corner with holiday records, musical oddities, campy collectibles, and my glowing Christmas tree covered in colored vinyl records. Best of all, as I said, DJ Chuck, Selector Starkey, they will be DJing live in person. All of it's happening at the music sale. You need to be there. Please tell your friends, bring them along as well. Doors open at 10. You know, the real collectors, the diehards, they start lining up before then. Sale goes into 3, so if you don't want to be in that opening scrum, you can shop more casually as the day goes by. It's the music sale. More info at WJFFradio.org. Just come on out. We'll see you there. Thank you so much. That's it for the Local Edition this week, heading into this big weekend. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. I hope you have a great weekend ahead. Thank you so much for listening. Coming up, our fabulous Friday night local DJ lineup starts with the mixtape at 7, but before that, we've got more news from the Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.
Oh. I'm Bill Williams. Join me Tuesday for the Kingfisher Project. My guests will be Bridget Brennan, Chris Adele, and Bernice Ordonez of the New York City Special Narcotics Prosecutor's Office. Tuesday evening at 6 on the Local Edition, only on Radio Catskill.